Today is April 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Coming up, the battle for Libya's capital, Tripoli.
8-year-old Noya Dahan was wounded by shrapnel, and her uncle, Almog Peretz, was shot in the leg.
That was Linda Gradstein reporting on the attack on a synagogue in California. Details coming up. And we will have a report on Avengers Endgame, a movie critics have hailed as a super spectacle and a befitting ending. It's all on today's International Edition. Khalifa Haftar's Libyan National Army, which is allied to a rival administration in eastern Libya, mounted an offensive on the capital Tripoli, seat of the internationally recognized government, 3 weeks ago. So far, it has failed to breach defenses in the city's south despite heavy fighting. The battle for the capital has also all but wrecked UN-backed efforts for a peace deal between the rival factions and threatened to further disrupt Libya's oil industry. To brief us on the latest, we have VOA's Heather Murdoch on the phone line direct from Tripoli. Welcome to International Edition, Heather.
Thank you.
So where do we stand now as far as the battling rival factions are concerned?
Today was a very chaotic day in Tripoli and in the suburbs of Tripoli, where the fighting is taking place for the most part. This morning, the Haftar's forces moved forward, significantly forward, and the battle was fierce by the afternoon in one main section of the fight. The GNA forces said that they had retaken a military camp called Yarmouk that had been taken by Haftar this morning, but Haftar has moved forward in other places. There was also an airstrike in the city today that seemed to be aimed at a prison but actually hit a restaurant. And over the weekend on Saturday, there were also between 4 and 6 airstrikes in the city near the airport in a crowded area that is also known to house one of the many military groups you mentioned.
My God, it's very serious. The UN envoy for Libya is touring European capitals to try to secure a consensus for a ceasefire and a return to peace talks, as Western and Arab countries remain divided over how to tackle Libya. How will that fare out?
Well, from the ground here, it looks like that the soldiers I talk to seem a bit hopeless in terms of how this is going to turn out. They had on the Tripoli side, they had high hopes for the two armies that are a consolidation of various militant groups, eventually joining forces to be one before the attack on Tripoli began 3 weeks ago. And there were peace talks scheduled for mid-April that have since been canceled. The idea to go back to peace talks seems to be the only possible solution, because although there is a lot of fighting here, it does not look like there will be a definitive outcome. It doesn't look like Haftar will be able to take over Tripoli without enormous amount of bloodshed, and the forces defending Tripoli seem to be holding the line for quite a while at this point.
What keeps Haftar going? I think France has long, along with the United States, has been accused in Tripoli of playing both sides since Haftar launched his offensive. What is the response to that kind of international backing for Haftar?
Well, I can say that there is quite a bit of anger, at least locally, in the city of Tripoli for the international backing of Haftar, and they blame countries that support that eastern military for the offensive, even sometimes more so than Haftar himself.
Haftar, as an individual, as a person, opponents in Libya see him as maybe a budding new autocrat in the mold of Muammar Gaddafi. Does he have any support in Libya as far as the Tripoli is concerned?
In Tripoli, there's not a lot of vocal support for him, and there's a lot of very vocal opposition. But I have spoken to several families that, while they're not specifically naming Haftar, they are saying that before 2011, when Muammar Gaddafi was overthrown, they felt Libya was stable and secure and they had money. And there is a considerable support among some families for the idea of a single strongman leading Libya again. In the past 8 years, the attempts to build a democratic government, while they haven't failed, they're ongoing. They have led to several renewed battles since then.
VOA's Heather Murdoch, take care of yourself. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Among the top stories trending across the globe, 38 people have been confirmed dead in Mozambique in the aftermath of Cyclone Kenneth. Taiwan resists as activists launch campaign to legalize marijuana. Sri Lanka, after the Easter Sunday explosions, has banned women from wearing face veils. And 300 Indonesian election officials die from work-related exhaustion. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Funeral services are planned today for 60-year-old Lori Kay, who died in the shooting at a synagogue on Saturday in the small city of Poway, California. Rabbi Yisrael Goldstein, who was wounded in the attack yesterday, sobbed as he described Kay as a person of unconditional love. San Diego County Police say 19-year-old John Ernest allegedly entered the Chabad of Poway Synagogue and opened fire with an AR-style assault weapon. His gun apparently jammed and he fled, but congregation members gave chase and fired back. Ernest later surrendered peacefully. He is expected to appear in court later this week. The rabbi appealed to all Jews to go to their synagogues this Friday night, the start of the Jewish Sabbath, to show solidarity and that terrorism will never prevail. Two Israelis were among those wounded in the attack at the synagogue north of San Diego, California. Linda Gratstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem on their reaction there.
During the service for the last day of the Passover holiday, 19-year-old John Ernest burst into the Chabad synagogue and opened fire with an assault rifle. Witnesses said 60-year-old Lori Gilbert Kay jumped in front of Rabbi Yisrael Goldstein and was killed. The rabbi was wounded, losing two fingers. Two other worshippers, both Israelis, were also wounded. 8-year-old Noya Dahan was wounded by shrapnel, and her uncle Almog Peretz was shot in the leg. Peretz grabbed several children and took them to safety as soon as the shooting started. He went back into the synagogue to rescue his niece when he was shot. The Dahan family had moved to the San Diego area from the Israeli town of Sderot near the border with the Gaza Strip to escape frequent Palestinian missile attacks. Gil Pasternak was in the synagogue during the San Diego attack. He said the gunman pointed a gun at him and told him to run. He jumped under a table and the gunman did not pursue him. U.S. President Donald Trump expressed his sympathies to the victims.
At this moment, it looks like a hate crime, but my deepest sympathies to all of those affected.
The gunman fled the site and turned himself into police. The shooting came just 6 months after a similar attack at a Pittsburgh synagogue that killed 11 worshippers. Linda Gradstein for VOA News in Jerusalem.
This is International Edition, an independent.
This is Science in a Minute.
A few years ago, a trio of physicists won Nobel Prizes for their work that shows the universe is expanding at a rapid rate. New research led by Adam Riess, one of the three Nobel laureates at Johns Hopkins University, has confirmed that the universe is not only rapidly expanding, but is doing so at a rate 9% faster than expected. Riess's researchers say that they use new measurements taken by NASA's Hubble Space Telescope and base the jump in speed of the expansion on a trajectory that was seen shortly after the Big Bang, nearly 14 billion years ago. The way scientists usually take their star measurements takes a lot of time. But using a new measurement method called DASH, the researchers were able to use the Hubble as you would with a point-and-shoot camera that many of us use today. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
an independent U.S. watchdog, named 60 nations today as the countries of particular concern for engaging in egregious violations of religious freedom. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom released its annual report today, 2 days after a gunman shot to death Jewish worshippers at a California synagogue and injured 3 others. That attack came 6 months after a man fatally shot 11 people at a synagogue in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania. The 16 countries named as the worst religious freedom violators are Myanmar, Central African Republic, China, Eritrea, Iran, Nigeria, North Korea, Pakistan, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Sudan, Syria, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, and Vietnam. In Myanmar, the report said severe right abuses affected the Rohingya and other Muslim, Buddhists, Christians, and Hindus. The report accuses the Chinese government of persecuting all faiths to make them conform to a Chinese identity, and that it particularly targets Tibetan Buddhists and Uyghur Muslims in Russia. The report said the government targets religious minorities with fines, detentions, and criminal charges under the pretext of combating extremism. Spain's governing Socialist Party is considering its options today after winning the most votes in yesterday's election. The Socialists fell short of an overall majority and a highly fragmented outcome in which the conservative vote split 3 ways. Surging far right and centrist groups undercut what was until now the main opposition, the Popular Party. The future has won and the past has lost, Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez told supporters. He hinted at a possible alliance with center-right parties. However, other socialist leaders have indicated the party might try to govern alone. The Spanish Socialist Workers' Party won an estimated 29% of the vote, giving it an estimated 123 seats in the 350-seat parliament, which is 40 more than it had. But the Popular Party lost almost half its seats, dropping from 137 to 65. Political analysts say it could be days or even weeks before the situation is clarified. South Sudanese from various walks of life are paying tribute to South Sudanese journalist and politician Alfred Taban, who passed away over the weekend. Journalists who worked with Taban described him as a tireless advocate for freedom of expression in Sudan and South Sudan. For VOA News, Dinga Magot has this report for VOA from Juba.
62-year-old Alfred Taban Logune was a former BBC correspondent in Khartoum. He also launched Sudan's first independent newspaper, the Khartoum Monitor, in 2000, which he later renamed the Juba Monitor after South Sudan seceded from the rest of the country in 2011. He was repeatedly detained by the authorities in Khartoum for criticizing the excesses of former President Omar al-Bashir's regime. Taban was arrested and detained in Juba for weeks beginning in July 2016 for asking President Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar to step down because, according to him, both leaders failed to implement the August 2015 peace agreement. Taban joined politics in 2017 to advocate for reforms and good governance. Several South Sudanese commentators on social media described the late Taban as freedom fighter, statesman, liberator, and hero. His uncle, Professor Taban Lo Leong, says the veteran journalist was a freedom fighter who criticized the excesses of the government in Khartoum during the war which led to South Sudan's independence.
He did help in the war, and he did fight the wars in Khartoum. He even saved some journalists and other people who were caught by the system for having pointed out with the wrong things done. So I'm glad that Logune had done his share of nation building.
Chaplain Kara Yokuju is the head of development communications at the University of Juba. He describes Taban as a man who spoke for the voiceless about injustice.
I remember him as being a fearless journalist who will tell the truth as it is, regardless of what the consequences are. So ever since he was in Khartoum and even here, and where you're interviewing me in his compound, I used to come here and we take pictures. Even when he was released from prison, you know, I come here sometimes and have a chat with him.
Anna Nimrano, editor-in-chief of the Juba Monitor, has worked closely with Taban since the launch of the newspaper. Nimrano says the impact of Alfred Taban on the media in Sudan and South Sudan looms large.
When he left media, I really noticed that it's difficult to get somebody like him. Because when there's some, if there are other things going wrong in the country, there's no somebody standing firm like Alfred. Even the time when he was chairperson of AMDIS, you know, anything happened to the media house or to journalists, you will see Alfred will come immediately and put it in media or whatever. But now when we compare with the time now, many things happen to journalists. There's nobody coming firm like Alfred.
Irina Yah, a media development officer at the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, or AMDIS, narrates what she remembers about the journalist.
My favorite memory was when Alfred was having a meeting with us at AMDIS, and then he challenged us that we were cowards, and he said for him, a journalist cannot be arrested and be taken to jail, and he is just enjoying his time at his home. He rather prefer him to be arrested instead of a journalist.
In 2006, Taban won the National Endowment for Democracy Award, during which a U.S. pro-democracy foundation said Taban had been one of the leading non-violent voices of Sudan's dispossessed and marginalized communities, as well as an advocate for national reconciliation, human rights, and democracy, end quote. A campaign has been launched on social media to raise money to pay for outstanding bills at the hospital where he died in Uganda and to transport his body back to South Sudan for burial. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
Avengers Endgame marks the culmination of Marvel's superhero universe since its first Iron Man film in 2008. Critics have hailed the three-hour movie as a super spectacle and a befitting ending, harkening back to the beginnings of the Avengers franchise. Since opening last Thursday, the film has broken nearly every record for ticket sales, topping $1.2 billion worldwide. VOA's Penelope Polu spoke with critics and industry insiders about the significance of the film, about its franchise, and the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
After a cliffhanger ending of Avengers Infinity War, where the galactic overlord Thanos reduces half of Earth's planet life to dust, the second installment, Avengers Endgame, is the final chapter of the Avengers franchise, bringing together all the superheroes of the Marvel Universe in a final battle against the omnipotent Titan. Washington Post comic book culture reporter David Betancourt says the film is expected to be the blockbuster of all blockbusters.
Connected narrative through multiple film franchises over the course of a decade. This will be the 22nd Marvel Studios film.
But what elements create a blockbuster of such magnitude? Above all, according to Paul Rudd, who plays Ant-Man, it is the characters.
These characters are archetypes. And the emotional resonance, the relationships they have with one another, and it's really the main thing that makes them movies work.
Then there's the storyline, says Thor actor Chris Hemsworth.
I think it's the darkest in some ways, the sort of wackiest in other ways. It feels like a, you know, there's a real sort of drama at the core of it, you know, a sort of small indie character-driven sort of drama on one hand, and then coupled with it being the most expensive, biggest visually stunning, smorgasbord, effects-driven film you could ever imagine.
A blockbuster could not be without an unexpected ending, says Avengers pioneer Iron Man actor Robert Downey Jr.
The last 8 minutes of that movie are maybe the best 8 minutes in the entire history of the whole run of them, in a way, you know, because everyone's involved.
Plot and characters aside, a blockbuster is about money, says Hollywood insider Stephen Paterno.
Disney, with the Marvel Universe and the Star Wars Universe, are, and never mind Pixar and all their family-friendly animations there, clearly have a blockbuster factory. And so, yes, that is generating billions, if not 10-plus billion dollars in theatrical revenue, but then it drives television and theme parks and action figures and the rest.
Movie theaters across the country offered marathon screenings of all 22 Marvel Cinematic Universe movies leading up to the premiere of Avengers Endgame.
Endgame, just based off of the pre-sales and the hype, it wouldn't surprise me if it inched towards $3 billion.
Dollars, that is. The end of the Avengers franchise also signals a new phase of Marvel Universe featuring a more ethnically diverse superhero universe, says Betancourt.
You have Black Panther, it made $1 billion. You have Captain Marvel, it made $1 million. Marvel Studios is now in pre-production on an all-Asian ensemble for an Asian superhero that they have in their ranks. They've proven that there's an audience for those type of heroes, not only an audience, but that the same audience you were treating with those initial Avengers movies wants to see those type of movies as well.
Hey, Miss Potts.
If you find this recording, don't feel bad about this. Part of the journey is the end.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, engineer, John Dryden. I'm Yehi Suhib, Washington. Enjoy the day.
I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.